Good evening. This is the Voice of America in Washington. Welcome to another edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'm Douglas Simpuga. This evening we talk about the effect of coronavirus pandemic on democracy in Africa. With us tonight is my colleague, Vincent Makori, Managing Editor of Africa 54. Vincent, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
You're welcome. And joining us by phone from Durban, South Africa, is regular panelist Suleiman Mugula. Good evening, Suleiman.
Good evening, Douglas, and our listeners.
You're very much welcome. And as I said, tonight we're talking about the impact of the coronavirus pandemic on democracy in Africa. According to some analysts, it will be some time, probably years, before the pandemic's full impact on democracy around the world can be judged. The extent of the damage will depend on how long the health crisis lasts and how badly it harms economies and societies. So far, there's little reason to be reassured about Africa's outlook for democracy and plenty of reason to worry. According to analysts, the pandemic hit during the hardest period of democracy since the end of the Cold War, and authoritarian and would-be authoritarian regimes wasted no time in exploiting it to enlarge and harden their power. More danger could lie in the horizon as democratic governments weigh the dilemmas of using new surveillance technologies to fight the virus and holding regular elections in the midst of the pandemic. So, Vincent, let's start from there.
Yes.
It's obviously evident on the continent some leaders have taken advantage of the pandemic to consolidate power and make sure that nothing changes.
We've seen evidence in a number of countries that some leaders would like to take advantage, as they want in every situation, to consolidate power and entrench themselves in the system and, if possible, extend their terms. We have to commend, though, although there was a tragic ending in a country like Burundi, where at least an election took place, somehow in the midst of that. Also, we've seen Malawi. An election took place in the midst of all this. Of course, there was so much pressure from a legal point of view, and also the citizens stood up and really wanted this election. But we have seen a number of countries, and for example, I want to hope that this is not a serious suggestion. In Uganda, for example, where there has been some kind of we've had some sounds here and there. That they would like, the establishment would like to extend, to change the constitution so that you can extend the presidential term and allow the current president to be in power perhaps until for another 5 years in order to deal with the coronavirus situation instead of holding the election sometime next year. Now, you know, when you start hearing such things, you want to hope that it's not true. Perhaps it's just some baseless rumors. But then, as it is in most of our countries, the incumbent would like to use any excuse to continue staying in power. When that is undermining democracy, because the citizens at this time don't have the opportunity to weigh in. And why would you want to change the constitution to fit, just to serve your own purposes? We've seen the same situation in Ethiopia, where again, the postponement of election has raised a few questions because the opposition, a big section of the opposition, says they were not consulted. They did not get involved in all the discussions that led to the postponement. And so it looks a bit suspect because also there is a constitutional issue here. The constitutional mandate supposed to come to an end and then have a new one beginning. And this came to a stop. And now there is a state of emergency in place, parliament elections, and also those that were to elect the prime minister that should have happened by this August have been postponed. Now, when you say they're postponed until the pandemic is over, we don't know how things are going to look like even come next year. Now, this has seen a suspect kind of declarations and sudden moves, whether they're serious or suggestions from those in the political establishment, they would be seen obviously as a scheme to try and undermine the democratic process in those countries.
I see. Suleiman, your take, because as Vincent says, there are signs for those who feel that maybe the pandemic gave them the breathing space they required to stay in power.
Exactly. I agree with Vincent. As noted, the continent has two blocks. You have got a block which is almost democratic. You take countries like Botswana, you take countries like Senegal, you take countries like Kenya, South Africa, Ghana, Nigeria. That is one cohort of countries who are almost democratic and who are found on a democratic path with some level of stability within their political stability within their countries. Such countries, for them, the pandemic was a social emergency, which they have attacked as with a multi-party approach, inclusively. All the stakeholders, all the citizens of the country are focused on fighting the pandemic, and they are all driving in one stage. Even if there are other issues, political issues arising in, they fall in. Even if we are to have elections coming soon, they fall in without interruption, without offsetting the political establishment. Side by side now, there is the other cohort, which has been dictatorial, which is the fragile state. Those countries which are fragile, those countries which are led by dictators, that was an opportunity, because the more years the dictators stay in power, the more the pressure from the opposing groups continue, the more the unemployment continues, the more the inequality continues, the more the poverty continues. So you find that many of these countries which have got dictators in power, the pandemic found them with the pressures from the people, from the opposition groups. So when the pandemic came, as Vincent has said, they have used it as a chance to lock up all the enemies, all their enemies. It is an opportunity for them to suppress those enemies so that they can continue to be in power. That is why in such countries where the elections are envisaged, they are trying to find a way to use the opportunity to make sure that they disorganize those elections, they make it to their advantage at the disadvantage of their competitors or of the opposing political parties. So I think that is what is going on within the continent. We have got two opposing groups, two opposing sides which we can look at.
I see. Then another thing that is happening is that this pandemic brought about countries locking down their borders and each country fighting on its own. So, Vincent, and Suleiman will jump in on this one too, the role of international regional blocks is sort of made mute, because now they don't bother what happens next door, the neighbor next door. Because like in the East African community, they can't tell Museveni don't do this. They didn't tell Burundi don't. I mean, the whole thing in the West Africa, they have the same problem. So the pandemic sort of made the regional blocks useless.
You know, you brought up a very, very pertinent issue here, because it has sort of exposed, this pandemic has exposed the weakness of this regional blocks, in that while people were hoping that the regional blocks were bringing the continent together, that countries were getting together and operating in a fashion that would, in a way, represent the aspirations of people of a particular region, now we're seeing the disparate kind of fashion in which they are operating, where neighbors have seen, like, say, Tanzania making fun of the neighbors that are taking certain measures to fight to stop the spread of coronavirus. You see the border issues between the East African countries, and we see the issues in the West African region. And one would have expected these countries to operate like, a family, to sit together and say, we have a common market. Because that's the whole concept. The whole idea is that the regional blocks first and foremost, before you get to a political union, is an economic bloc. And the economic bloc means that our economies are symbiotic. We rely on each other. We depend on each other's strength. And therefore, whatever we do should not adversely impact in a negative way Uganda or Tanzania or Rwanda or Burundi. And whatever measures we take were supposed to protect the fundamentals that are supposed to keep us together and to grow. Now, this was very myopic, the reaction to this coronavirus, in that every country suddenly recoiled to its own corner and put in place measures, which are commendable, yes, to try and stop the spread of the virus. But this is like a family. If we are a family and we live in a large house, we have different rooms, but we all have to share the meals, and we have to share the certain amenities within the compound. We need to talk about it. We need to sit down and discuss and say, okay, perhaps you you're very sick and you can infect other people. Stay in the room there, but we will make sure that you get your food, okay? We'll have some protocols to make sure that nobody gets infected, but we are one. I find this as a moment of reckoning for the region of blocks. How united are they? How realistic is this objective of forming a one economic bloc with a distance? Hopefully, it was actually for some were seeing even a near future economic union in some of our regions, like the East African Union community. So I think, I don't know, my brother Molo will weigh in on this, but I think it has really exposed the fundamental weaknesses within this regional blocs.
Suleiman.
Precisely. These blocs are a facade. You need to have components which are self-sustaining. So long as the components are weak, you cannot have a sensible block, whether Southern Africa, whether Eastern Africa, whether Western Africa. In Southern Africa, whether South Africa is okay and Botswana is okay, but so long as Zimbabwe is still weak, so long as Swaziland is still weak, so long as Mozambique is still weak, then the block is meaningless, because the population, the economies, all of them are weak. They are reliant on the others. So long as we don't have strong countries, so long as we don't have democratic countries, so long as we don't have uniform political policies, I mean uniform standards, which we carry in politics, in economics, in social development. So long as countries are left to move in different directions, these regional organizations will also remain very weak. Even they don't have control, as Douglas has said. In Mali, when they have got problems, the West African Union has tried to talk to them, but they cannot listen to them because they are not wound together. They don't have common Mali. It was just a facade that they belong to the organization. So long as the systems, internal systems, continue to be weak, so long as countries don't wake up to say, even within this regional grouping, so long as they don't put up standards and they say that for us to be a union, for us to be an organization, we need to have certain political standards, that we have to be democratic, we have to be transparent, we have to reach at that level. Economic sustainability, we have to have a certain degree, we have to finance our budgets, we have to be able to do A, B, C, D. So long as we don't reach those levels, even those regional organizations will remain weak, as they have been exposed now, that they are meaningless once there is a crisis. Indeed, even they showed us when we had the crisis of Ebola, the same thing happened. We saw that the elements themselves don't help so long as the individual countries are very weak.
I see. Well, for those just joining us, you are listening to Reporters Roundtable, and we are coming to you from Washington. Our topic tonight is we're looking at the effects of the pandemic on democracy in Africa. Our panelists are my colleague Vincent Makori and Suleiman Mugula, a South African-based independent political analyst, and I'm your host, Douglas Impuga, here in Washington. Now, gentlemen, you just pointed out the shortfall, the shortcomings of the regional blocks.
Yes.
Now, the other sort of lack that some African autocrats have is that the so-called development partners, those Western voices and noises that they make and encourage democracy and all, and good governance, they have their own problems now. They don't seem to care, Vincent.
Oh, exactly. And I think at some point we kind of brought that up, that point, in that this pandemic has also given Africa an opportunity to self-reflect. The extent to which the continent is self-reliant. Why? Because at the moment, as we speak, all the Western countries or the Western powers are busy trying to survive economically and even in terms of saving lives. So this is a time of reckoning for African countries that always look to the West or sometimes even to the East now. The reality is that the rest of the continent, the rest of the world now is also dealing with its own problems, and the coronavirus on its own doesn't even have a cure in the West. So there's no longer even a place to go for those African elites and the political elite with their cronies and family members. So the point here is our economy cannot be dependent on external help. At least whatever needs to be done to ensure that African economies can create sustainable systems. Whatever our economies are based on, agriculture and minerals and all that, there have to be structures and infrastructure to ensure that the continent grows, that the continent develops certain internal structures that can allow this continent over 1.something billion citizens, which is awash with all sorts of precious minerals, which is so fertile in so many parts of the continent, it could manage itself in a way that there can be self-reliance, there can be sustainability, even if there is a struggle, as it is now in every region of the world. But we have now been shown that we can't depend on the other side. We can't depend on our friends from across the oceans and the seas. We have to find a way to have the African economy relying on each other, working on the strength that we have as individual countries. Every country has a certain strength, and all of them, if they work together, there can be a burgeoning economy of the continent as a continent, and within the countries, in a way that African people don't have to starve every time a Western nation says, we're not able to help you. We shouldn't starve. We shouldn't depend 100% on external help.
I see. Suleiman, I think Vincent has a point there, because now as things stand, Ethiopia can lock up all people making noise in thousands, and nobody raises a voice. Uganda, the local defense forces can kill people on the streets for violating coronavirus regulations, and nobody mentions it.
The sad part of it is that, by and large, the international community has been complicit in stifling the political development, democratic political development on the continent. It is the very international community which has had double standards, in that while they preach economic sustainability, while they preach the need to have proper policies to have economic development in African countries, they have failed to rein in onto the dictators who are stifling that the attempts to grow these economies. The major roadblock to the development of our African economies is the rotten and rusty leadership on the continent. If you have got a system where you change leaders, the way it is done in Ghana, the way it is done in Botswana, the way it is done in Senegal, the way it is done in Kenya. If you have got a certain degree of changing leadership, then you can achieve what Vincent is talking about. You can emancipate the country economically. But if you have got a leader, for example, in Uganda, in Rwanda, in Togo, in Chad, in Central African Republic, in the way it was in Zimbabwe, one leader to sit with his either decadent policies, to sit on the economy of the country and then destroy it totally, then there is no hope for that country. What makes it worse is that that very leader, while he continues destroying and looting the country, the international community continue to give him loans. It continue to give him budget support. It continue to support him morally. As you are saying, the soldiers now have been released on the streets and they are locking up people, they are shooting people and they are killing, and nobody is talking about it. Because these particular dictators have got support from the international community. So the international community itself, its participation now on the continent for the last 30, 40 years has not been for development, especially in many countries that have remained undemocratic and oppressive. The international community has been complicit, has been part of the team, and they are helping to stifle any attempt to help the countries. And unless these countries are liberated politically and you get a democratic, transparent regime which can draw policies which are pro-people, there is not going to be any movement on the continent of Africa.
I see. Vincent, also, we can't talk about the pandemic's effects on democracy in Africa without talking about abuse of human rights there, because you have already mentioned a little bit about it. But it seems in some countries, the leaders that are there have now taken advantage. They can do as they wish.
Oh, yes. I mean, we've seen that. We've seen continued arrest of people in Ethiopia. We've seen what's happening in Uganda, the restricting of the right to engage with citizens. We've seen people being killed for just in the process of so-called reinforcement of COVID restrictions in countries like Nigeria. We've had experiences of violence in Kenya. And all that shows you that even when people are already going through very, very scary times, some of these governments also, are now more concerned about achieving their own objectives politically, that protecting the rights of the citizens, the fundamental human rights of the citizens, is secondary. In fact, in any case, there's more violation, as we say, because nobody cares. Nobody, especially those the Western world and the others from outside who have always made a little bit of noise, are not there to speak. So it's a shame that we have to keep talking about countries violating the rights of their own citizens, and yet they're elected to serve those citizens, to protect the interests of the citizens. Recently, coming off of this protest over the killing of a black American man there across the continent, there was a lot of conversation about the brutality that is meted out on the ordinary citizens by the authorities to protect the interests of the elite, such that citizens are treated like enemies of the state. And right now, during the time of the COVID, there have been even more violations in most of the countries. And that tells you that the elite class, the political elite class, is more concerned about staying in power, protecting their own interests, and will not allow people to raise their voices. In as much as in a democratic country, the citizens are supposed to be the ones who call the shots. The leaders are supposed to serve at the mercy and at the pleasure of the citizens.
Suleiman, briefly.
Year after year, Transparency International comes out with the reports. Human Rights Watch comes up with the reports. And we know the countries with or without COVID. There are many countries in Africa, especially the dictatorial regimes, are abusing the rights of people. You cannot talk anything without talking about the death or the abuse of rights of people in Cameroon, in Chad, in Uganda, in Rwanda, in DRC. I mean, there is obvious impunity. Even before COVID, the soldiers were free, the policemen were shooting the way they want. Any political activity, they brutally suppress it. Of late, even in Tanzania, the same abuse of people's rights. The people cannot assemble. Now COVID has made it worse. People are being shot at the pretext of lockdown. People are being brutally imprisoned because of the pretext of lockdown. So people are being thrown in jail after 48 hours. They are still there. After that, they are released in Rwanda, in Chad. These are the same people. So really, COVID has only accelerated, has only given them opportunity to increase their impunity. Otherwise, the impunity has been there. Now it has even added on another factor. They are denying the right of people to livelihood. They have locked them down, and they cannot give them social relief. They cannot work. They are not allowing them to work. They cannot allow them to move, yet they cannot give them social relief. They cannot give them food. So that is also another abuse of rights of people.
I see.
So at the moment, the COVID has even made it worse as far as the countries which were in dictatorial regimes were concerned.
Vincent, in 10 seconds left, what do you think will come out of this when and if this pandemic goes away?
I think there are going to be a lot of surprises. Surprises will be to do with the full impact of the corona pandemic on the economy, but also on the social activities and the extent to which democracy will have suffered in a number of African countries.
I see. Well, gentlemen, that's about all the time we have for this edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'd like to thank our panel, my colleague Vincent Makori, managing editor of Africa 54, and Suleiman Mugulan, independent political analyst based in South Africa. Gentlemen, once again, thanks very much for being on the show.
It's a pleasure.
You're very much welcome. We'll be back again next week with another edition of Reporters Roundtable. The reminder that in case you missed any part of this program, you can still access it by going to our main website at www.voanews.com. Click on Programs and scroll down to Reporters Roundtable. Once again, thanks very much for tuning in. We'll be back again next week with another edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'm Douglas Simpuga in Washington, wishing you all the best.
Host Carol Castiel this weekend as two regional Africa experts debate the latest developments on the Grand Ethiopian Renaissance Dam. And they examine China's pervasive surveillance efforts on the continent. Don't miss VOA's Encounter program with Carol Castiel this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.